Welcome to ICOSA's Driving Force Radio, where we discover what drives today's leaders. Now, here's your host, Jan Mazzotti.
Good morning, and welcome to Driving Force Radio, where we seek to discover what drives today's leaders. On today's show, we are honored to have three fantastic guests with us to talk about true leadership in the face of real issues. Our first guest is Arak Gurung. He's one of the original Lost Boys of the Sudan and is now the leader of an NGO called the Seeds of South Sudan. And the beautiful thing about this is he lives here in Denver and really is this great resource for folks to come to on this issue. We also have Tom and Margaret Melander, who are working with Iraq to build Seeds of South Sudan, and they work as missions coordinator at Arvada Covenant Church. Welcome to the show, Iraq.
Thank you.
And welcome, Margaret.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, Iraq, your story is so compelling, so I don't want to tell the story. I want you to tell the story for us. Tell us a little bit about how you became a Lost Boy of the Sudan.
Well, first of all, I was born in 1982 in South Sudan in a small village. Life was really good in the village, and I was very happy. I used to play a lot. My mom and my dad were farmers. They keep cows, goats, sheep, all these kind of animals, and life was really good. But in 1989, when I was 7 years old, the war broke out and my village was destroyed. Many people were killed, and at that time I ran to save my life.
So, you know, when you say that you ran to save your life, I mean, there were a lot of families affected by the war in the South Sudan. And talk about that a little bit. I mean, here you are, a 7-year-old little boy, and your family's gone. And your village is gone, and everything you know in life, I mean, is gone. What does that feel like, and what are those steps a 7-year-old takes as they go forward?
Well, actually, it was a very confusing time, but I was trying to do everything I can to keep going.
Yeah, and there were a lot of boys that were in the same situation with you, yes?
Yes.
And you guys journeyed together out of the South Sudan, correct?
Yes.
And what happened then?
What happened is that we left as a group, and at that time we didn't have food to eat, we didn't have any clean water. So what we do along the way was to eat leaves of trees, whatever that was eatable. We also drink dirty water and keep going. One of my cousins actually was very helpful to me. He was 10 years older than me, and he carried some water for me because I was easily get dry out and need more water, but he make sure that he keeps some water for me until I'm almost dying, and then he will give me a little bit to keep going. Most of the boys and die along the way because of lack of water, because of lack of food. Some were also eaten by wild animals. And some eat wild poisonous fruit and die because of that.
Oh, geez. Well, I know that there were 12 to 15,000 of you that were affected by the war in the South Sudan. And you know, you had no food, no clothes, no shoes. And it was a 1,000-mile journey to Ethiopia. And here you are, young boy, a whole lot of young boys who are dying along the way. Talk about that, and talk about the arrival into Ethiopia a little bit.
We arrived in Ethiopia in December of 1989. In Ethiopia, we arrived there, and we stayed there for about 2 weeks. And then the United Nations came in, and they helped us with medicine, food. And we stayed there for about 18 months. And then another war broke out, and we were forced at the gunpoint to go back to Sudan. So during that time, it was the rainy season. We have to cross some rivers, and some of the lost boys get drawn in water, and some were eaten by a crocodile.
So, You know, Iraq, this story, I can't even fathom it. And you know, there's been so many stories of violence around the world, and I think people don't understand this. And this story just rings so true, even still today. There's war, and it's children and other human beings being affected by war. So you're in Ethiopia for about 18 months, and then they force you at gunpoint to head back to the Sudan. What are you thinking at that point? What does that feel like? What does that look? What does that look like?
Well, it was a mess, and it was a terrible time for us, because we didn't know actually where we were going and what is going to happen next. So it was kind of worried. We were worried about what will happen next, or whether we got killed or something will happen. So it was very confusing, but whatever happened, we keep going. That was the goal.
And so, you know, you start out with 12,000 to 15,000 young men, and now you're down to however many. I mean, many are gone, and you're nine. And I have a nine-year-old, and I can't mm-hmm. imagine what that's like. Is your cousin still with you? You know, are you on your own at this point? What is that looking like?
Well, my cousin who was helping me got killed in the war in 1994, because he was older than me. And when we left Ethiopia, he joined the army, and he got killed. But I also had others, cousin. Two of them came here with me to U.S.
Okay, so you're headed back to to the Sudan, and you follow the border into along Kenya, and it takes you a year to get back. Is that correct?
Yes, it took us a year to go back to go to Kenya because it was during rainy season and
you're barefoot.
Yes, so sometime. It took us a long time to go from place to place because the whole area was full of water, and sometime we have to spend a night on tree because there was no place on the ground to sleep or to take rest. So that's why it took us about a year to go to Kenya.
Right. Well, obviously you're a very dedicated man. And I know that you've started the Seeds of South Sudan since then. And Tom, I want to come to you. You know, the Seeds of South Sudan is such a unique organization. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It is. What this is Iraq takes, when he was living in the refugee camp in Kenya called Kakuma, that's when he came to the U.S. And since he's been here, he takes kids that are still there, South Sudanese kids that have basically grown up in the refugee camp, and they're orphans. He takes them out of that school, out of the refugee camp, and gets sponsors for them so that they can be educated in a boarding school in Nakuru, Kenya. And so his ministry is to get these kids sponsored so they can get an education, and then they can go back and rebuild their country.
Yeah, basically, South Sudan is the newest nation in the world, and they became a nation last summer?
Yeah, July 9, 2011.
July 9th, 2011. And there's very little infrastructure in the South Sudan because of all the civil war that's been happening for two decades. Mm-hmm. And so Iraq realized that the best way to rebuild the infrastructure of the country would be to educate the children, and then they could go back and they could rebuild from the ground up. And so he's using those children as resources to his brand new nation.
I love that. And Iraq, you're very educated. Talk about that a little bit. I mean, you're educated in Kenya. Talk about how those older kids taught the younger kids and things like that.
Well, at Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya, our goal was to get educated, and we help each other. Those who were in grade 3, which was the highest grade, teach those who were in grade 2, And those of us who are in grade one, you know, get help from grade two.
Mm-hmm. And now, so, one of the most impressive things I think that I know about some of these Sudanese boys who have landed in Denver, one of them has a PhD in mathematics from CU. Iraq has is working on his master's in global economics. Wow. And so they have transcended adverse circumstances at the beginning of their life.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know that there aren't many resources often in schools in Africa. And it says, you know, that they guys wrote in dirt with your fingers because there was no writing utensils. And cardboard was the chalkboard with charcoal as the chalk. Yeah. And so there weren't resources, but it didn't mean you couldn't learn.
Yes, our goal was to get educated, so we tried to use whatever available resources, using charcoal to write on a carton board and write on the dirt with our fingers.
Mm-hmm. And one of the most famous sayings in Sudan is, because they're orphaned, education is my mother and my father. So they would, education could give them the advantage that their mother and father were not able to do anymore.
I love that, and I think that's so true.
So we've seen videos of kids who, with the very little that they could take with them, they'd take a book.
Really?
Or a Bible, or things to read.
And carried it those 2,000 miles during the big walk. They had a knapsack with a book in it.
Really? What book did you take, Iraq? Did you take one?
Yes, I was having a grammar book that I got in Ethiopia.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so how did you ultimately end up? I mean, you start in Sudan, you head to Ethiopia, and then you end up in Kenya. How did you end up in Kenya and that, and then end up in Denver?
Well, I ended up in Kenya in 1992 because when the war broke out in Ethiopia, the United Nations told us to go to Kenya because the war was still going on in South Sudan. So we stay in Kenya for 9 years, and then in 1999, the United Nations told her that they talked to the U.S. government, and U.S. government accepted us to come to the United States.
And there were 3,800 of you that came from Kenya to the U.S. Yes.
Yes.
And how did that go? I mean, did they just pick you up and drop you off somewhere? How does that work?
Well, they divided us into many groups. And in those many groups, there were also subgroups. We were grouped in a group of five. That means five people could stay together and they can help each other. And that's how we didn't know actually where we were going, but we were told that you are going to the United States. And
so Iraq was on the third plane load of South Sudan of Sudanese boys.
And these were kids that had never been on a truck, in a car,
right,
much less an airplane.
They loaded them on the plane and took them to the U.S. And also, I've heard some of the Sudanese boys say that the worst day they have had in their life, and keep in mind they had some bad ones, was the day it snowed in Denver.
Really?
Because they thought the coolness could kill them.
Really? Yeah, that was the worst, was the snow?
Yes, it was terrible. I don't know. I'm getting used to it, but
yeah,
I'm still working on it.
So, Tom, talk about it a little bit, too. You know, here's Iraq getting on the plane. The United Nations says, yeah, everything's okay. We're going to group them in groups of five and put them on a plane. They don't all come to Denver, but Iraq ends up in Denver. Talk about a little bit about that and, you know, sort of that journey
well,
for Iraq.
Yeah, so these kids or young men are loaded onto this plane, and they're given airplane food and this new things that they'd never seen before. Iraq was pretty smart. He knows he didn't eat on his airplane trip. Because, you know, he had a tender stomach. But they come over here to the U.S. and the government would actually help him out for 90 days. But this is
only for 90 days.
For 90 days. And then they expect him to be on their own.
And these are boys that have been in and out of refugee camps uh-huh. since they were young.
Right.
And really never had, I mean, never really known the modern anything.
They have never sure. seen electricity. Yeah. They have never seen a car.
They didn't know
wow.
how to cross the street and read the stoplights.
They didn't know what a doorknob was. I mean,
And they get 90 days.
90 yes. days
to figure
of
it
assistance.
Out. Yeah. Wow.
And they figured it out.
Yeah.
And so that's what impresses me the most. Like I said, these are transcenders.
Yeah.
So they put Iraq and the other kids into a Emily Griffith Opportunity School.
Great school.
And to try to learn English mm-hmm. and American ways and things like that. And they work on their GED. And so Iraq, he actually did a lot of studying on his own. For his GED, and he passed it. But the whole Iraq's history of being with the other boys and for survival, they always work together. They're a very strong community, something yeah. that we could take notice of.
Well, and I want to ask all three of you this question because I think, you know, you've heard the term Lost Boys of Sudan. But I think a lot of people may not understand what that means. So, Iraq, tell me, what does the Lost Boys of Sudan mean for you?
Well, the Lost Boys of Sudan doesn't mean anything, but it means a group of boys whose their parents were killed or who lost their parents during war in South Sudan. It was the name given by Pira, a praying American.
Uh-huh.
To the Lost Boy when we were in Ethiopia.
Okay.
Now I'm not a Lost Boy, I'm a young man, but right. The name is Tiramin, but that's where the name come from.
Okay.
Right. I think it's a little bit of a misnomer because right. they really aren't lost anymore. They have found their way and
it doesn't sound like they were ever lost. I mean, they were lost from their country.
Yes.
They were, and
but they were so tied together.
And I've heard somebody say they were lost in time, really, because they had such a long, long journey.
Right.
And so they were lost in that sense, but no more. They're doing great things. They've overcome, and they're doing great things, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, Iraq, I have to come back to you. So, Tom was just saying, you know, you land here in Denver. You're clearly not accustomed to the cold and the snow here. But I have to ask you, what was life like when you first got here? What are those first things that you experienced and what was that like?
Well, my first experience, the difficult part was that whenever I was in car, I vomit.
Car sick.
That took about 6 months, and I was taken to many different doctors and given different kind of medicine. But it didn't work until I started driving myself.
Gotcha.
So there were so many things that were confusing, you know, how is like going to the supermarket, I easily get lost.
And crossing the street.
Because it was so big, crossing the street. Yeah, it was like learning again.
Yeah, yeah.
One of our favorite stories that Rox tells is the first time he and a few of his friends went out to lunch. Tell them about that experience, Rox.
Yeah, what happened when we first get here, we stayed for about a month, and we were given some money by agency, you know, to buy few stuff. And one time we decided to go and eat at an American restaurant. So there was a Burger King close to our apartment. So we went there, we didn't know what to order, and we were asked, what do you want? And we say, we want to eat. And then they said, do you want to eat cheeseburger? And then we say, yes. And, you know, they show us a big picture of cheeseburger. And when they bring our order back, we say, no, we order the big one, not the small one.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what else? What else? What was the most shocking thing about being in, you know, you've come from Kenya, you've come from all of the having nothing to a city that's bustling. What else? What else was those big shocks for you? Burger King, crossing the street, cars.
You didn't yes. eat hot dogs because you were afraid it was dog.
Yes, yes. There were so many things that were confusing at the time. American food was very different culture shock was very because America is very different from where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a small village where everybody know each other, and it was easy to go around. But here in America, you know, being on the bus and you don't know where to get out, it was very confusing.
Sure.
In many different sense.
Sure. So you get here and then you enroll over at the Emily Griffith School. How did you get educated here? Because I'm imagining education here, even in its, you know, most base form, is very different than it is from where you came from. Talk about how you got educated here in the U.S., Iraq.
First of all, when I first get here, the first school that I went to is Emily Griffith. At Emily Griffith, we were taught, you know, English as a second language and how to express yourself in English. So that was good, and I was there for about 1 month. And then after that, I went on my own to study GED.
Oh, wow.
And then I take a test, and I pass it. And that was the time that I start going to Denver Community College.
Mm-hmm.
I stay in Denver Community College for 2 years, and then I went to CU.
Wow.
CU Denver.
And now you're working on your Master's of Economics?
Yes.
And where are you doing that at?
At CU Denver.
At CU Denver as well. Wow. That's amazing. What do you want to do with that Master's degree?
I want to go back to Africa and help with international development.
Wow.
And that's my goal, to help build communities.
Sure.
Yes.
Sure. So, Tom and Margaret, how did you guys get engaged with Iraq?
Well, a couple of years ago, I'm the missions coordinator at my church. And Stacy Eggers, our director of children's ministries, came and told me that she was wanting some ideas for their vacation Bible school. And about a month previous, I ran into an old friend, Tamara Buchan, who was telling me about Iraq and his ministry and about the lost boys and just educating these kids and everything like that. So I approached Stacy with that option along with several others, and immediately she just jumped on working with the lost boys. And so we took that on, it was just hard to understand Iraq's story and talking about Kenya, talking about South Sudan, all these kinds of things.
Right.
So Margaret and I, our daughter Kelsey, happened to be working in Kampala, Uganda for the University of Colorado doing AIDS research at the time.
Oh.
And so we were going to go out and visit her. And so we thought, well, since we're
in the neighborhood,
we'll run over to Kenya and go check out this school that Iraq was telling us about, Roots Academy. And so we flew into Nairobi, and we were able to get up to Nakuru. And we stayed in a motel, a Western motel there, which they had a little bit of trouble finding, but they found us one. And the night before, we met four other lost boys. And that was just a great experience. One of the kids was 3 years old, even younger than Iraq when he was a lost boy. But we had dinner with them that night, and then the next morning, we went off to the school and got to meet the kids that Iraq is supporting. And, the kids were amazing. The school was amazing. It's actually in the British education system, so there's 12 grades. The headmaster or headmistress, the lady who runs the school, she gave us a tour taking all the classes. Margaret can tell you about the first class that we went to that was really interesting.
Well, it was the baby. They called it the baby class, and there were 3 and 4 year olds. And 3 and 4 year olds were writing complete sentences in a notebook with proper punctuation, grammar, capitalization.
Wow.
And we were just impressed. And we got letters from those kids afterwards, and we were hooked.
Yeah, these 3 and 4 year old kids were doing subtraction math.
But the Sudanese people that we have met help themselves, and they're just the kind of people that you want to give a handout to.
Right, right.
A hand up to.
And it sounds like, you know, Iraq's obviously, since the time he was seven, been on this journey, been on this path of discovery and of success, and is well on his way. And then, you know, to have you all and the folks that support the work that he's doing and helping him get through this part of his journey so that hopefully he can go back and build that infrastructure of South Sudan and the country that he loves and that is home for him are absolutely fantastic. And, you know, as you said, Margaret, it's about this, it's a story about transcendence and a story about leadership in a way that many don't think of. It's not about running a Fortune 500, you know, organization, but it's about the human being transcending and becoming this amazing leader for themselves, for their cities and for their homeland. And when we come back, we'll have more with Iraq as well as you, Margaret and Tom. And we'll talk more about Roots Academy and what the organization is doing now. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Driving Force Radio with ICOSA. Once again, here's your host, Jan Mazzotti.
Welcome back to Driving Force Radio, where we seek to discover each and every week what drives today's leaders. And today is such a fantastic show because we have three amazing people here today who are doing leadership in such a very different way. Typically on this set, or you're hearing from business leaders and folks that are running major companies. And today we are talking about leadership from the heart. We are talking about leaders who are changing the way the world deals with refugees and with children and with countries that are war-torn. And these three people sitting here with me today are just amazing role models in this way. My first guest is Iraq Garang, who is one of the Lost Boys of the Sudan. He escaped the Sudan in 1989 when he was 7 years old and walked 1,000 miles into Kenya to a refugee camp. And my other two guests are Margaret and Tom Melander, who work with Iraq to build the Seeds of South Sudan organization and who work with the Arvada Covenant Church. Welcome back to the show, Iraq.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Welcome back, Margaret. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
You know, Iraq, we were talking during the break about what it must be like to be seven and to lose everything that you've known. I mean, you came from a fairly affluent background when your parents were alive, and then war breaks out. You're seven, you have no shoes, you're headed out to Kenya on a 1,000-mile journey. How do you know where to go? How do you know what to do? You're seven.
Well, we know where to go because we have to follow the road that was going to that direction of Ethiopia. None of us has been there, even our parents. But we follow the road. The road takes us to Ethiopia.
And the journey was so, I mean, I imagine was very traumatic. I mean, you're losing boys left and right on the journey due to malnutrition, starvation, dehydration, but also because of war. And, you know, you start out with 12 to 15,000 young men, and at the end of the day, there's 3,800 of you left. What does that feel like, and how does that motivate you to say, I'm going to change the way this is done?
Well, my motivation is that in life is to keep struggling and do whatever you can. Since that time up to now, what I think about is what I can do to help others, and what can I do to help myself.
So, Margaret, before we went to break, you and Tom were talking about the work that you do with Iraq and the Seeds of South Sudan organization. Tell us a little bit about the work that's going on there.
Well, Iraq continues to get his story out, and we talk to classes in school, and we talk to church groups and civic groups, and people are touched, and they want to help educate these war-torn orphans who have had no breaks in life. When we went to see Roots Academy, the students sent us letters after we had been there, and they said, "Dear Mother Margaret," and that got me. And they signed their letters like, "From your lovely son, David Kawir." And I was actually the kid who never wanted to go to Africa. I remember in fourth grade sitting in my home church and there was a missionary from Congo, and I remember saying, praying, God, please don't send me to Africa. Please, please, please don't send me to Africa, which is how I ended up in Africa. But the letters that I got from those beautiful kids that we had met at Roots Academy, well, here I am. That's what happened.
Right, right. Tom, and again, before we were going to break, we were talking a little bit about what Iraq is doing now and how, you know, the entire country has been decimated by war, but that you guys are working to really create that next generation of leadership there by educating youth in the country.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that and what you're doing in that vein.
Well,
what is Roots Academy, I guess?
Okay. Well, Roots Academy is a school. It's basically kindergarten age through about eighth grade. But it's interesting because when I first met Iraq, he was talking about education, and I was just your typical American. I said, okay, Iraq, we need to go to South Sudan and build a school. And he just looked at me and said, that won't work. And I said, why not? He said, you won't have any teachers. And I said, why not?
Yeah.
And he says, well, we need to educate the teachers. So that's what he's doing is he has to start from the ground up. He has to educate teachers so that he can build the people so that they can go back to South Sudan and build the people that are living there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he's trying to do is he's trying to build people who can go back and be teachers or businessmen or doctors, lawyers, things like that, people that you need to actually build a country.
Right. So Iraq has had a clear vision from the very beginning.
I love that it's about the development of this new country. You know, South Sudan became its own country in July of 2011, and before it was just part of Sudan.
Right.
And now it's its own country. And, you know, the thing about Roots Academy that is so interesting is it's one of the top 10 schools in the country.
Yes.
Right. And there are so many fantastic things about the school. Can you talk about that?
The school has about 260 students.
Mm-hmm.
About 60 of these are South Sudanese. And the others, it's a boarding or a day school for the Kenyan kids that are going there. But for the South Sudanese, it's a boarding school. So they go and they live there several months of the year. Iraq, he not only finds a school for them to live in, but it's kind of like when we send our kids off to college. They come home during breaks, Christmas, New Year's, you know, three times during the year they have to leave the school for about a month. And so Iraq has actually done a great job of finding a place for these kids to go when school is out of session. And so he has a house where these kids can go and stay, and they have somebody there to cook for them and to look after them and just to take care of them.
That's fantastic. And so Iraq, the school is built on this concept of sponsorship of the children to get them through the school year, correct? Can you talk about the cost models of that? What does it cost to send a child to Roots Academy for a year?
It costs $1,200 to send a child to Roots Academy.
Okay.
One of our goal is that these children get good education. Not every school in Africa that graduate students that go to college or succeed in different countries, in different college.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of very unique school with a very high education level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good school, and our hope is to educate these children through high school.
And that sponsorship cost also includes their food, their room and board, and their books, and their uniforms. Everything they need for
a year. $1,200 a year to go to the academy. The ultimate goal is to educate 100 Sudanese students a year, correct? So right now you're educating 60, so you're well on the way and stuff, but talk about how you get sponsorship. How do people come to you and say, you know, I'm really interested in this. How do you get sponsorship?
Well, a lot of it is that we We go out speaking, like Margaret said earlier, we go out speaking to schools or civic groups or rotary clubs, things like that. We try to get that word out. And that's been very good. Our church has been great about this. And in fact, for the last 3 weeks, we've had a program going on there to where it's just a big program for three different sponsorship groups. Mm-hmm. We have Arocs, Seeds of South Sudan, trying to educate those kids. We have orphanage in Chihuahua, Mexico, called Casa Hogar, Palabra de Vida. Gary and Cindy Nickerson work with that and run that from here, and they sponsor kids there also. And then our denomination, the Evangelical Covenant Church, they began a big program just this year, just kicked off, where they're looking to educate 10,000 kids in the Congo. It's called Covenant Congo Kids. And this is done in partnership with World Vision and UNICEF.
Sure.
And so between the three groups, our church has come alongside and really helped with this sponsorship. Mm-hmm. A couple years ago, when we first got involved with Stacy Agers and our kids' vacation Bible school, we raised money for a grinding mill. Mm-hmm. For Arocs Village in South Sudan. Well, that not only let the 400 kids that were in our vacation Bible school know about a grinding mill in Arocs Village, but it also got the word out that his main goal is to educate these kids at Roots Academy. So through that, we were able to get some sponsorships.
Sure.
And then in the past year, we raised money for a water well. And again, word gets out that Iraq, his real purpose is this education.
It's education, but it's also nation building.
Yes.
It's about right. Leadership that's non-governmental, but it's about this nation building.
A brand new nation.
It's about nation building a brand new nation,
right.
But not being a politician or any of those
right.
things, but saying, you know what, this is what I have to do. This is my journey in life. And you said, as I think the quote is something to the effect of, God spoke to you when you were walking, and he said, one day you will come to rebuild your village, Iraq. And it sounds that's like exactly what you're doing. And you know, you talked about that God sort of led you on this journey and he spoke to you during the journey. Tell us how he's leading you in the journey.
Well, God is leading me in this journey of helping people in a very blessing way. Like you see Tom and Margaret are here. People are coming around me to help, and that is really a blessing to me. And I have seen that God is doing a lot and is calling people on to be part of this. So it's really a blessing.
Well, and indeed, you're on that journey to go and rebuild your country and rebuild your town and that. So, Margaret, you know, the $1,200 per child per year that does everything from soup uh-huh. to nuts to educate, it's like you could do it as $100 a month as an
right.
organization, as a business, as a,
right.
as a company. What are other ways that folks could get involved, Margaret?
Well, we can always use time. You know, we've got some accounting that needs to be done and newsletters and getting the word out. And so if somebody has a little bit of time to donate, they can call Tom.
Okay, and to get in touch with Tom or Iraq, you can go to www.seedsofsouthsudan.org. That's seedsofsouthsudan.org. But I want to come back to, you know, we talked about just financial donations,
yes.
Tom, but there are other ways that folks could help. I know that there's things that are needed in the housing compound there.
Right.
What are some of those things, and how could organizations give of themselves?
Yeah. Well, when Mark and I got to go visit the school, Iraq did a great job of finding a place for these kids to stay, a roof, walls,
right.
shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But what we noticed was that, you know, they didn't have beds for all the kids. They and the mattresses were old. And part of what we were able to do that first year was to get new mattresses for the kids, and pillows and sheets and blankets. And again, we got letters back from the kids saying, I remember one said, thank you so much. If it hadn't been for you, I'd have been sleeping on the ground this month. And another kid said, I've never had a pillow before. Thank you so much.
One said, this is the first present anyone has ever given me.
Yeah. And so we were able to get the bedding, but then we also were able to get some dinnerware plates and dishes and things like that. Because they'd have to eat in shifts because they just didn't have enough of these. So now they can eat together, and life is better. It's easier. And then last year we got some books.
Right.
So we can always have people if they're able to find a way. It's not practical to buy books here in the U.S. and ship them because it's so expensive.
Right.
But if they can help us purchase books that we can get over there, then Iraq can basically get the kids books and different readers and things like that. One thing that we've tried to do is over there they speak English, so the classes are in English, so a lot of the books are in English. But we also try to sustain their Dinka heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to get them some books that are in Dinka also.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, and it's located outside of Nairobi, so it's
uh-huh.
it's a fairly central place. It's a fairly easy place
right.
in terms of transportation to get it to one central point and then get it on to the school, because it's just outside of Nairobi, correct?
Yes. Yeah, about 3 hours away.
Okay.
2 or 3
Okay. So what are the needs of the school, Iraq? You know, I mean, there's larger projects for the village in South Sudan and for this rebuild that's going on. I mean, you're rebuilding your community. You are the epitome of a leader. What do you need? What are these big projects? What do they look like?
Well, the first project actually is to build people who can build the nation. In Africa, there is a chronic of poverty. It's because children born poor and die poor and become nothing to the society. So the big deal is to invest in human being, you know, so that they can learn and educate others about what they learn. There are also other projects. In my village in South Sudan, there are agriculture. They depend on agriculture and they need a tool to use to grow more food to sustain themselves. So there are also a problem of water, clean water.
Right.
And Rwanda Cabinet Church have done a very wonderful job of raising money last summer to...
Well, in Iraq, here in the U.S., we take clean water for granted. I mean, we really do. Talk about the issues of clean water in your village and why bringing clean water is so beneficial, because I think when we have it all the time and we just turn it on and
right.
we don't even think about it, you take it for granted. Why is it beneficial?
Clean water is very beneficial because it eliminated some diseases that people get from water.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helped the village to educate a girl, because most of the time in South Sudan, girl go for about 2 miles to go and get water to home. So if you have a clean water at home, it will give them an opportunity to focus on school instead of going some mile far away from home.
I love that.
In that culture, the girls are able to go to school until they get to be about 12 or 13 years old, where they've developed and they're strong.
Mm-hmm.
Once they're big and strong enough, then they have to drop out of school, because their purpose now is to go and get water.
Water and wood.
Water
right.
and wood. Yeah.
I had to do that when I was there. And I tell you what, I had a car, too.
Oh, good.
I didn't, I tried to live that way.
Oh.
After about the fourth day of lugging water, I was like, ladies, get in the car. We're driving. But I understand the importance of clean water, and I was never so happy to come home and have a warm shower
right.
and have water just come out of a faucet and brush my teeth.
And most people don't really link it to the education of young women
and girls. And
right.
and for me, I mean, we talk about this a lot in the magazine at ICOSA, how important it is to open the doors for women and right. young girls as well as it is for men
right.
All over the world, because right. they too have a huge voice and bring a lot to an economy, especially in a developing country.
Right.
Another thing that does too is if you have the water in one place in Iraq's culture, they don't have regular money like we know it, dollar bills and coins and things. They trade in cattle.
Oh.
So cattle is so important, and it's a part of the world that has a dry season and wet season. So when it's a dry season, kids like Iraq, when he was small, they'd have to go with the cattle to go find water.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you actually have water on location there, then it lets them really not have to travel so much. And so that's where then they can actually, you know, think about building the schools and building the businesses and things like that. It doesn't have to be a group that moves around so much, but it also makes it safer in that if Iraq and his people need to go someplace to get their water, well, they're going on somebody else's land, and that creates
tension.
Yeah, sure.
And problems.
Sure.
So water, it's the best thing you can do for a place like this.
Right.
From health to safety to education.
Gotcha. Iraq, there's other things going on in your community. You have everything from building some churches and schools, as well as a goat project. Can you talk about those?
Sure. That is our goal in the future, or soon we get some plan to start building school so that small children can start going to school, because they are getting older without education and it will be hard later to educate them. That's why we started at the Robert G. Camp in Kenya to start educating some people, some orphans, so that they can go back to South Sudan and be teachers. And that way we can educate, start building school building.
Mm-hmm.
So the first goal now is to build people and then later build a school.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How long is that time frame? I mean, how long is it going to take to build teachers enough, to develop teachers enough to go back in?
It might take a little while. It might take 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah, because we have to educate these children to go through high school.
Gotcha. Margaret, there are so many ways that people can get involved in, and like we talked about, you know, people, when you hear this story, it's you can't help but be moved. This
right.
is a moving story. But how can listeners engage with Seeds of South Sudan and learn more? I know that you can come out and give presentations, things like that. Talk about that a little bit more and how they get engaged.
Well, I'm going to pass that to Tom.
You know, really the support that we need, we just need to get the word out, get people understanding Iraq and what they go through here, you know, what their life is about. But we do need, you know, finances is a big thing. You know, we talked about it's $1,200 a year. But that's just walking pretty well the fine line, to where we actually, you know, there's Iraq's cousin over there named Gak. He kind of oversees the kids when they're in Kenya. And so, when the kids are over there, there's a cook and a couple other people that take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to be able to, support them. And right now things are really tight.
Sure, know,
trying,
sure.
Trying to do that. As Iraq's organization grows, they're really outgrowing the housing compound.
The facilities.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And so we're trying to figure out a way to expand on that, you know, to find another place to rent or to maybe buy some land, partner with somebody, mm-hmm. Build a bigger house, you know, where these kids can stay,
mm-hmm.
and where there's more beds and more dishes and plates and bathrooms
the
and things
basic
like
things.
That. Yeah,
right.
just the basic things that we take for granted.
Absolutely. And we do take it for granted. I know I've been there myself. You do take this stuff for granted here in the United States, and we are so amazingly blessed to be here. And, you know, if you're moved by this story, when you're moved by the story of Iraq and Tom and Margaret and the work they're doing with the Seeds of South Sudan, you can get engaged. They can come and meet with you and give a presentation to your group, to your organization, to your school. You can come in and meet with them. It's a two-way street on this one. You can sponsor a child. It's $100 a month. Maybe that's your business. Maybe that's a coalition of people within your own organization. $100 a month sponsors a child, 4 years, soup to nuts, to be able to go to the academy. One-time purchases are always helpful. You can get with Tom and learn more about that. And, you know, Iraq, I have to tell you, I'm inspired by you. I'm inspired by a young man who at age 7 had everything taken away. And here, as you are today in 2012, are working your tail off to get back there and grow your country back to where it was. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So thank you for all you do, and thank you for being that inspirational leader that you are.
Thank you for having me, too.
And to learn more about Seeds of South Sudan, go to seedsofsouthsudan.org. Again, that's seedsofsouthsudan.org. Or you can call Tom at the Arvada Covenant Church at 303-422-1235. Again, 303-422-1235. Margaret, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Tom, thank you again.
Thank you.
And Iraq, thank you so much for everything that you guys are doing, all of you. Have a great day and have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us here at Driving Force Radio.
You've been listening to Driving Force Radio with ICOSA, hosted by Jan Mazzotti. ICOSA invites you to do something different. Be a driving force. Influence change. Be a leader. Visit us at theicosamagazine.com.